an historic moment. I'm going to finish this evening. Okay? So we're now about an hour and a half, Tim. What time is it now? About 8:45? 8:50. Okay, we're making good progress. Okay, making good progress. Now, the Congress of Freedom, again, a most inappropriately named group. This group, involving high-ranking, active-duty American military officers, was talking in the spring of 1963 about the need for assassinating American political figures in order to advance the cause of anti-communism. One of the people in attendance at the Congress of Freedom was an American fascist and associate of the National States' Rights Party named Joseph Adams Miltier, M-I-L-T-E-E-R, okay? Now, Miltier, in speaking with an undercover Miami police informant in early 1963, was talking about plans to assassinate President Kennedy by sniping him from a high-rise office building while he was riding in a motorcade. For that reason, Kennedy's motorcade in Miami, prior to Dallas, was canceled. Interestingly enough, the Miami police informant then contacted the FBI, who took no action against Joseph Adams Miltier. That same Miami police informant, a fellow named Willie Somerset, was contacted on the morning of 11-22-63 by Miltier, who said, "I don't think you're ever going to see your boy," meaning Kennedy, "in Miami again," unquote. A few days after the assassination, Joseph Adams Miltier was boasting about the fact that President Kennedy had in fact that the quote, Patriots movement, unquote, okay, the Patriots movement had infiltrated the pro-Castro elements, probably indicating the 544 Camp Street, 531 Lafayette Place operation that I've already detailed, and that they were very successful in pinning the Kennedy assassination on the communists. He also boasted of being in touch with an international underground, in all probability the underground Reich of the Galen Organization, the ABN, Nazi elements in exile in Spain, effectively controlling Germany from abroad. And that is, in all probability, the international underground that he was talking about. I wonder today about connections between the militia movement and that same international underground. Miltier then also talked about plans to assassinate Martin Luther King in a similar fashion. In an indication, though, of the way that what goes around comes around, Miltier himself died in a suspicious explosion of a Coleman lantern in 1974. He confided on his deathbed to an associate that he felt he had been set up and hit. So those who live by the sword die by the sword under the circumstances. One of the many suspicious deaths in connection with the assassination of President Kennedy. I spoke about overlaps between the Minutemen, again in many ways a paradigm that could be seen as a precursor of the militias, overlaps but not coterminous with the national security establishment, used but not institutionally connected to the national security establishment, and overlapping but not coterminous with many fascist groups. One of the elements that the NSRP overlapped were the National States Rights Party, of which Miltier was a member. Elements of the NSRP crop up in connection with the assassination of Martin Luther King as well. In fact, James Earl Ray, the patsy for the Martin Luther King assassination's brother Jerry, had been a bodyguard to J.B. Stoner. We should also note, too, that another fellow who was making threats against the life of Martin Luther King was a fellow named Keith Gilbert. Keith Gilbert was an American Nazi, later became an associate of Richard Butler's up at the Hayden Lake compound, allegedly broke with, or supposedly broke with Richard Butler. I sometimes wonder whether some of these quarrels are affected just to split off some of these groups to make them plausibly deniable. But Keith Gilbert became an associate of Richard Gernt Butler at the Hayden Lake compound in Idaho. He was sentenced to a number of years in prison for attempting to blow up Martin Luther King, who was speaking in Los Angeles. He had something like 1,400 pounds of dynamite, got a relatively brief prison sentence, and boasted while in prison that he was receiving outside financial support from person or persons unknown. Keith Gilbert's name also, and by the way, he had a rifle being refitted at a Minuteman underground arsenal when it was raided, and that's one of the connections between Gilbert and the Minutemen. Keith Gilbert's name crops up in LAPD intelligence files in connection with a Saran-Saran double named Michael Wayne, who was in the Ambassador Hotel when Robert Kennedy was assassinated in 1968. In all probability, Michael Wayne was in some way involved with the setting up of Saran-Saran, the patsy in the assassination of Martin Luther King. And Keith Gilbert's name in LAPD intelligence files was linked with that of Michael Wayne. So again, in looking at the Minuteman milieu, again, a milieu that overlaps many fascist groups, and also obviously has been used as a proxy by many elements by our national security establishment for guerrilla operations and in all probability domestic assassinations as well, we are seeing something that I think could be viewed as a paradigm, as a parallel to the militia movement, which again incorporates many sincere, although for the most part badly misinformed conservatives, many of whom believe in democracy and democratic values and are sincerely patriotic. The militia milieu also overlaps fascist elements as well. There are many fascist elements within the militia milieu, and we're going to talk about those in a minute. But bear in mind that with the Minutemen, I think we're seeing something that in many ways is parallel to, in terms of structure and function, to the militia movement today. What we're going to do now is take a short break, only about 5 minutes, or we won't be able to finish on time. And remember what I've analyzed about what I've set forth about the evolution of American fascism, the relationship between the paramilitary right and the national security establishment, and between the paramilitary right and fascist elements. And bear in mind the apparent use of the paramilitary right and the Minuteman milieu in particular for not only U.S. covert operations, but also domestic intelligence operations such as our political assassinations. We are going to see what I believe is a structural and operational parallel between the early paramilitary right and the contemporary militia movement. But this after about a 5 minute break to give people a chance to stretch and so forth. Alrighty, bearing in mind all of the things that I have delineated about the evolution of American fascism, about the history of fascism, in particular the National Bolsheviks, the social revolutionary wing of the Nazi Party, who in supporting and elevating Hitler imagined that they were overthrowing and going to counteract the forces of international capitalism and high finance. You can't be any more wrong than that. They were in fact supporting the ultimate manifestation of multinational corporate capitalism and high finance, and once they had helped do Hitler's dirty work for him, they were liquidated in 1934. I believe there is a very strong and direct parallel, although not precise, between the social revolutionaries in Weimar, the National Bolshevik wing of the Nazi Party, and the genuinely patriotic and genuinely conservative element in the militia movement today, which is very large. There are many sincere conservatives and patriots within the militia movement. However, there are also many outright Nazi and fascist elements, and hence my assessment at the beginning of the lecture that the political rhetoric has simply been inadequate. To make a long story short, we have the government and the mainstream press and also the so-called progressive sector, note the use of the term so-called, saying that Oklahoma City was, the militias and that they're bad and that they're no good and they're fascists. Then we have the so-called Patriots Network, again note the use of the term so-called, and the militias, as well as the conspiracy crowd who have aligned themselves right with the Patriots and the militias, saying that Oklahoma City was the government and it was the government that's bad. In fact, as I've indicated, that political dichotomization is inadequate. I think that Oklahoma City, which I'm going to touch on and again in just a second, was a collaboration between fascist elements within the militias and fascist elements within the government, but not necessarily most, or certainly not all, not even necessarily most of either. More about that in a minute. However, I think just as I think those who have termed the militias fascist, although I think the militia phenomenon has many fascist overtones, as I've indicated, that's not to say that most or even all or even most of the militias of the people in them are fascists. At the same time, I think that the militias themselves, the Patriots networks and their defenders within the conspiracy crowd have been very guilty of a simple oversimplification on the other side. And there are most definitely some outright raving Nazi and fascist elements within the militias, and some of them most definitely are subversive and are no good at all. Now, in the first place, I spoke in the beginning of the lecture about the Aryan nations, and I talked about some of the evidentiary tributaries running from Oklahoma City to Euro-fascist elements, German in particular. Bear in mind the fellow Kirk Lyons, who was a Nazi attorney, an Aryan nations attorney. He was the liaison between Andreas Strassmeier, who was the security guard at Elohim City, a Nazi compound, a white supremacist compound in Oklahoma, the Timothy McVeigh, called 2 weeks before the bombing. By the way, for those of you who have not heard me lecture about Oklahoma City, as I've indicated, I think that the logistics of that crime were far too great for two people to have pulled off, regardless of their military capabilities. At the same time, it would not surprise me if Nichols and McVeigh were in some way involved, perhaps as low-level operatives and throwaways, I can't say. And again, it's interesting that everybody, people who would nowhere near the expertise that I bring to this, they all know exactly what happened with Oklahoma City. I have more questions than answers. And frankly, and this is not to blow my own horn, but that is really the proper way to proceed with intellectual inquiry. You base your conclusions on the facts available. You don't throw out whatever facts don't suit your preconceived conclusion in approaching it. And I'm afraid that both sides, vis-a-vis the militias, Oklahoma City, etc., have been guilty of that intellectual fallacy. Kirk Lyons was the attorney for, among others, Louis Beam. Louis Beam is a former KKK member, now an intimate of Richard Gert Butler, up in Hayden Lake, Idaho, of the Aryan Nations. Bear in mind the former Butler associate Keith Gilbert, whose name crops up in connection with the assassination attempts against Martin Luther King, and also Saron Saron. Oh, by the way, I said that Saron was the patsy for the Martin Luther King assassination. That was a misstatement. Obviously, he was the patsy for the Robert Kennedy assassination in Los Angeles. Richard Gert Butler, again, like William Potter Gale of the Christian Defense League, evolved from not only elements associated with the MacArthur Group, but from the American fascist movements of the 1930s and 40s, such as Gerald L. K. Smith, who, like Adolf Hitler, was financed by Henry Ford. Now, Louis Beam, as an intimate of the Aryan Nations, he was the deviser of a strategy called leaderless resistance. Now, this is very, very important. One of the reasons why I don't even think one can talk about, quote, the militias, unquote, is that the militias are a mixed bag. Not only with sincere conservatives involved in their ranks, but no doubt many government infiltrators. One of the rules of thumb is if you're in an alternative political group, whether it's right-wing or left-wing, you should assume that every fifth person is an agent or informer for somebody, whether a police red squad or an intelligence agency. And the militias in particular appear to me to be a group that would not only be infiltrated, but would be very susceptible to the actions of agents provocateur. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think it's adequate to talk about the militias. I think they are heavily infiltrated. In fact, regular and devoted and very attentive listeners to my program may have noted that in early 1995, I expressed my opinion on a program that was aired on Roy's show that the militias were heavily infiltrated and that some of their ranks were under mind control and that they would be used to create terrorist incidents which would serve as the pretext for establishing the very martial law that they were opposed to and against which they were forming. Okay? Then bang, Oklahoma City and a lot of other things too. You know, it's, you know, why doesn't anybody listen to me? But anyway, you can't win them all. Louis Beam. Now, this in assessing the inadequacy of talking about, quote, the militias, unquote, and I think that's an inadequate term and an inadequate rhetorical consideration, Louis Beam has concocted the strategy of leaderless resistance. This is a strategy which involves Nazi and white supremacist infiltration of various organizations, and Beam has been very vocal in advocating that they infiltrate militias, and the formation of small cellular groups of 3 to 6 people who would be united only by ideology, but because of their small size, would be very difficult to infiltrate. And in turn, he has been very vocal, Louis Beam, about advocating that Nazi and white supremacist elements infiltrate the militias. So in assessing the perhaps abstract generic militia group, we're not only looking in all probability, almost certainly at government agents, probably every fifth person is an agent or informant for somebody, whether it's a state police agency, a federal agency. And I think that in turn, the government infiltrators are of several different types. I think there are infiltrators there. There are no doubt infiltrators who are just there to gain information, to monitor what's going on. I think there are infiltrators there who are also to be used as agents provocateurs to try to bait the militias into acts of violence. In turn, they are also infiltrated, not necessarily with their knowledge, although some of the militias are formally allied with Nazi and fascist groups. They are also being infiltrated by Nazi and fascist groups who are organizing themselves in small autonomous cells in order to commit illegal acts, which then might very well be blamed on the militias as a whole, thereby outraging, and again, remember my use of these two key words at the beginning, polarization and stratification. That would polarize and stratify the non-fascist elements within the militias who would be outraged, sincerely so, at being implicated in the acts of terror that the small fascist infiltration cells had in fact been guilty of perpetrating. And it is a pretty good bet that Louis Beam and his ilk, bearing in mind that his attorney, Kirk Lyons, was the go-between between Andreas Strassmeyer, the security guard at Elohim City that McVeigh was calling, who admits knowing McVeigh, he's the son of Helmut Kohl's chief of staff. Right? That may be one of the things that the government is covering up in Oklahoma City, and they're obviously covering up some things. First of all, who the hell was John Doe number two? That disappeared very quickly. So it's obvious that there's more to this than we're being told. Whereas we were being told that the militias were involved, now they're not saying the militias are involved. They're saying it was two lone nuts who had bad family lives and broken homes and, you know, no jobs, so that's why they blew up the federal building. There is also, by the way, a firm indication that part of the proceeds which were used to finance McVeigh and Nichols' operations, whether that would involve Oklahoma City or not, came from the robbery of a gun dealer who came to know McVeigh and was robbed of roughly, I think it was believed, $60,000 to $80,000 worth of currency and various goods. He has stated that the masked robber was definitely not McVeigh or Nichols. Okay, who was that robber? Why have we been told nothing about him? And indeed, why are all of a sudden they're not talking about the militias? I'm going to talk about that in a second. But bear in mind that one of McVeigh's acquaintances was a white supremacist security guard for a white supremacist compound who was in turn the son of Helmut Kohl's former chief of staff. So we at least have an evidentiary tributary running from the McVeigh milieu, whether or not McVeigh was involved in Oklahoma City, to the corridors of power, not in the United States, but in Germany. Hence, some of my speculation early on about the possibility that fascist elements within the militias may be analogous to the Cagoulois and the Croix de Feu, the underground French fascist movements who helped to subvert France on behalf of Nazi Germany prior to and then during World War II. Now, the Oklahoma Federal Building is something that has been targeted in the past. First of all, in the Turner Diaries, allegedly the inspiration for McVeigh and the act that he allegedly committed, bombing, by the way, is put out by the National Alliance, an American fascist group, an American Nazi group, that is known to be targeting military bases for infiltration. In fact, they've set up a group right outside of Fort Bragg where two white supremacist soldiers allegedly killed two black. I say allegedly because they haven't been on trial yet. There's no doubt whatsoever about their guilt in my mind, but they still haven't been tried, so hence the use of the term alleged. That, by the way, the Turner Diaries is about a white supremacist takeover of the United States following, interestingly enough, the attempt by the government to confiscate firearms. I saw an interview on Thursday night on ABC in which they interviewed Jennifer McVeigh, Timothy's younger sister. She's saying, oh yeah, I read the Turner Diaries. It's not a racist book. It's just about people opposing the government and gun control. Yeah, right, that's not a racist book. One of the central features in the Turner Diaries is called The Day of the Rope, in which white supremacists would execute people of color, and in particular white people who have been, quote, race mixers. They advocate their complete extermination, which is portrayed quite graphically in the Turner Diaries. Well, if that's not racism, I'm Milton Berle, okay? But again, Jennifer McVeigh saying, oh, it's not racist. Yeah, not much. That is one of the most hypocritical. She should get an Academy Award for Best Supporting Role by a Child Actress, I'm afraid. That was just not real good. Reminds me of Denise Brown, Nicole's sister, and I've talked about the O.J. frame-up. By the way, there's a very important new book about how O.J. Simpson was framed called Legacy of Deception. And by the way, the author, Stephen Singular, was the author of Talk to Death about the white supremacist murder of Alan Berg. And his inside source within the L.A. legal establishment contacted him about the O.J. case because he said neo-Nazis aren't just outside anymore. They were in the system and were implicated in the framing of O.J. Simpson, which he indicates beyond a shadow of a doubt. And this information was brought to the attention of the defense and the prosecution, neither of whom used it. They found, and they have photographs in the evidence file about O.J., of a blue LAPD plastic evidence bag lying just on the other side of a fence dividing O.J.'s property from his neighbor's, right near where the glove was found. Yet, the defense, although they pointed this out, never brought it into play during the entire course of the trial. That and other things could have proved O.J. Simpson innocent. He was framed. He did not do it. But I've speculated about a deliberately compromised defense in connection with the O.J. case. F. Lee Bailey has intelligence connections going way back, and he was the guy who questioned Furman. He didn't point out the LAPD blue evidence bag. But there's a recent book called Legacy of Deception by Stephen Singular about the framing of O.J. Simpson and tying it directly into the phenomena that I'm talking about. In fact, he speculates about a possible link between O.J. and Oklahoma City. How about that? That was the topic of my last lecture here. But not stating necessarily that there were direct connections, but that some of the same political forces may have been at work and that there may have been direct connections. You know, Furman goes up to Hayden Lake, or goes up to Sandpoint, Idaho, active Aryan Nation cell up there, was known both in the military and in the police to be painting swastikas on the lockers of black soldiers or fellow detectives who married Jewish women. That's not too cool, but Marsha Clark knew this a week after the crimes were committed and still decided to go ahead and didn't want to hear about it, despite the fact that an assistant DA and a 17-year veteran of the DA's office brought it to her attention. Marsha Clark, by the way, one of Ms. Magazine's Women of the Year. But this reminds me of Jennifer McVeigh's performance saying, "Attorney Diaries isn't racist." Yeah, no, it just talks about, you know, hanging, killing, slaughtering people of color and race mixers. That reminds me of Denise Brown, who became a feminist icon and set up a feminist group to aid battered women. I certainly, sympathize with battered women. However, she was dating at the time a fellow named Tony Fiato, a.k.a. Tony Rome, a.k.a. Tony the Animal, a former mob enforcer turned federal informant. And just listening to her go, "I deplore violence of any kind." Yeah, right, except when Tony's out breaking kneecaps, right? Grotesque. We really live in a sick effing society, and it's getting sicker by the minute. Anyway, the Turn Diaries begins with a Nazi revolt in which a truck-borne fuel and fertilizer bomb of the type that supposedly was used at Oklahoma City blows up the FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. This signals a Nazi uprising in the Day of the Rope, that non-racist slaughter of people of color and race mixers, right? And if we should note, though, that the Oklahoma Federal Building has long figured in plans for a Nazi uprising in the United States. First of all, in 1983, there was an alleged plot to blow up the Oklahoma Federal Building by white supremacists and American Nazis. People who were indicted for this crime included a fellow named Louis Beam, the deviser of the strategy of leaderless resistance, for whom Kirk Lyons was the attorney. Kirk Lyons represented Louis Beam at his trial for conspiring to blow up Oklahoma City. Kirk Lyons, again, the liaison between Andreas Strassmeyer and his father, Gunter Helmut Kohl's former chief of staff. Andreas Strassmeyer, bear in mind, was the security chief for a white supremacist compound called Elohim City that McVeigh called 2 weeks before the bombing. Now, another of the people who was a defendant in this trial, or actually initially a defendant, he then turned informant, was a guy named James Ellison. James Ellison was a white supremacist and the founder of a group called the Covenant, the Sword, and the Arm of the Lord that was broken up in Arkansas in the mid-1980s. The government's case failed against the defendants because he was a very weak witness. Ellison, along with Strassmeyer, was another of the security coordinators for Elohim City, headed up by a fellow named Robert Millar, again, an identity preacher. And again, McVeigh called this compound 2 weeks before the bombing. Now, another of the defendants in the 1983 alleged plot was a white supremacist named Richard Snell, S-N-E-L-L. Now, Richard Snell was awaiting execution on April 19th for murdering a pawnbroker whom he thought was Jewish, and also an Arkansas state trooper who had stopped him for speeding. Richard Wayne Snell said shortly before his execution, look over your shoulder, justice is coming. Actually, it might have been shortly before the bombing, I'd have to double check that, but he said, look over your shoulders, justice is coming. Okay? The day of his execution, Oklahoma City was bombed. Robert Millar then went to claim the body of Richard Snell. Okay? Robert Millar, the head of Elohim City that McVeigh had called, whose security coordinator was Andreas Strassmeyer, whose attorney is Kirk Lyons, who represented Louis Beam at the 1983, at the trial of the alleged 83 plot to blow up Oklahoma City, of which Snell was a member. Okay? Now, it gets better. In its March edition of its newsletter, Taking Aim, the militia of Montana was talking about the Significance of the date, April 19th. It was on that date that the British tried to seize the colonists' arms at Lexington and Concord. April 19th was the day of the Warsaw Uprising. It was the day Waco was liberated. Bear in mind what I said about Waco as a domestic intelligence operation. But then, and this is very important, it says that, and on April 19th, Richard Snell will be executed if we do not take action. Okay? Richard Snell is a white supremacist cop killer. Okay, now for those who would represent, by the way, the militia of Montana was headed up by a guy named John Trockman, last name T-R-O-C-H-M-A-N, who was an intimate of and a frequent guest at the Hayden Lake compound of Richard Gurnt Butler, again descended from the C.D.L. Gale Swift Gerald L.K. Smith heritage that I've already outlined. Okay. For those who would portray the militias, now I've indicated the dissatisfaction that I have with the rhetoric portraying the militias as all a bunch of fascists. But at the same time, on the other side of the coin, the Patriots Network and the conspiracy crowd who've lined up, who've bitten hook, line, and sinker on this one, they portray the militias as just a bunch of mature Eagle Scouts and sincere patriots, and there are outright raving Nazi and fascist elements in their ranks. What kind of an organization champions a Nazi cop killer? Which is what Richard Snell was, saying he will be executed if we don't take action. Well, hell, man, you go around murdering people, cops in particular, you think you can reasonably expect in today's climate to face some rather severe legal retribution, okay? For those who would represent the militias as just a bunch of Boy Scouts and overlook the fascist and Nazi elements that comprise some of their ranks, and in some cases, because of the leaderless resistance strategy, unbeknownst to the rest of the militias, just think of that. What kind of an organization champions a Nazi cop killer? Also, in early 1995 at a militia conclave, a militia conference, there was a need stressed by some of the speakers to track the speed and time of arrival, the schedules of Amtrak trains. Well, that's a strange thing to be doing. It'd be difficult to imagine anything more benign than Amtrak, unless maybe it's the United Nations. Then later that year, in October of last year, an Amtrak train was derailed in Arizona, and a note was left blaming this on the Sons, taking credit for this on behalf of the Sons of the Gestapo, and talking about Ruby Ridge and Waco. Bear in mind that all the Justice Department officials in charge of Waco were Bush Justice Department holdovers, who in turn were members of the interagency governmental networks that were set up pursuant to the recommendations coming out of the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism. I detailed this in my Waco lecture. The Vice President at the time, of course, was George Bush. And these interagency government networks were literally used as a government within a government. Totally illegal, totally unconstitutional, and sort of George Bush's private intelligence agency and government within a government. And it was those networks and the members of it that were used for both the Iran weapons transfers and the illegal Contra weapons transfers, the Iranian weapons transfers, also, of course, illegal. They were also used for the Iraqgate weapons transfers, totally illegal. And members of those networks, including people implicated in both Iran Contra cover-ups and Iraqgate cover-ups, were on site in charge of Waco. They also then, members of that same network, wrote the report exonerating Janet Reno of any wrongdoing after Janet Reno exonerated them of any wrongdoing in connection with Iraqgate. Even though Clinton was in office, the Justice Department officials in charge of Waco, and I believe that was a domestic intelligence operation intended to destabilize Clinton, to send a message to Clinton. The four ATF members killed in that had been bodyguards of Bill Clinton during the campaign, and intended to, once again, here's that word, polarize and stratify the American people. You notice that none of these people were complaining about the government and the New World Order and all that crap. You didn't hear about them during Bush, you know. They didn't seem to be minding much of anything that was going on. Now, when Bill Clinton, you know, the ultimate yuppie puppy, comes out of there, and, you know, his hands are a little bit dirty as well, but compared to, he is an Eagle Scout compared with Reagan and Bush and the people that have gone before them, even though he's tainted in a number of ways. I'm not a big fan of Bill Clinton. But, and as I've indicated before in my assessing Bill Clinton, I think von Bismarck's assessment of Kaiser Wilhelm I applies to Bill Clinton. Von Bismarck said of the Kaiser, quote, "He is like a cushion. He always bears the imprint of the last A blank blank that sat on him." And I think much is the same is true of Bill Clinton. I feel sorry for him, man. He has a lot of very serious A blank blanks that have been sitting on him. I'm very suspicious of the recent death of Ron Brown. The plane that he went down in, by the way, was the plane that Hillary and Chelsea were riding around in. I wonder if that was like a high, hard one in baseball. You crowd the plate too much and you zing one on your chin and say, "Hey, Billy, you do what we want or else we'll get your daughter and your wife the next time." and we got your friends. We'll get anybody we want. And it's a sick situation. A lot of interesting things about the death of Ron Brown, but that comes later, maybe another lecture. Now, bear in mind again that after a militia conference advocates the need for tracking the rate of speed and time of arrival, the schedules of Amtrak trains. Then we have an Amtrak train being derailed with fatal results in Arizona, attributed to the Sons of the Gestapo. The press and the government say that we've never heard of a group called the Sons of Gestapo, but a Christian Science Monitor reporter went down to that part of Arizona, interviewed all kinds of people, said, oh yeah, we know about the Sons of Gestapo, it's a local white supremacist group. But they didn't think that they would have done anything like this. I can't say whether they did or didn't, but the point is there is a Sons of Gestapo group in that area, and they took credit for this, whether or not, in fact, they did that, or whether it was an agent provocateur group. But again, for those who would dismiss the militias as just a bunch of Boy Scouts, what conceivable innocent motive could there be for tracking Amtrak trains? None. I had some hockey puck call me up on my show in Northern California and said, well, you know, maybe they were tracking Amtrak trains so they could follow the movements of government agents. Right on, bro. That's just what those government agents do, man. All those undercover spooks hop right on Amtrak in order to get around the country. Just a great way to do it. You know, they have a little badge saying, hi, I'm working undercover for the FBI, and I'm taking Amtrak. You know, it's just stupid. But anyway, the point being that there's no conceivable innocent motive for doing that, because I think that just as the progressive community or the so-called progressive community and the government and the mainstream press have been guilty of oversimplification and a certain amount of bigotry against the sincere conservatives within the militia movement, so too the militia movement, the so-called Patriots networks, and the conspiracy crowd who've taken their line hook, line, and sinker are guilty of overlooking some very obvious indications of fascism and wrongdoing in connection with the militia movement. Now, again, the militia of Montana, headed up by an Aryan Nations intimate, John Trockman, was advocating action on behalf of Richard Snell prior to Oklahoma City. Certainly not enough to implicate the militia of Montana in Oklahoma City, yet at the same time, that is an evidentiary tributary which runs in the direction of a militia group in connection with Oklahoma City. Non-definitive, but obviously somewhat suspicious. And yet, we're not hearing about this. One of the indications that there's more of this particular little meat pie than we're going to find on the plate at first glance, okay? And bear in mind that Robert Millar, the head of this compound, was the fellow who took control of Richard Snell's body after he was executed. Snell, one of the accused in the 1983 conspiracy, the many connections between that group and the milieu of Elohim City and the Aryan Nations milieu I've already talked about. Another indication that the militias are not Boy Scouts, and an indication of how grotesque and how one-sided their blind defenders are, okay, and again, as an abstract concept, I support an armed citizenry. But in fact, if you're going to carry a gun, particularly in a political context, you had bloody well know what's going on politically, and if you think the United States is going to be taken over by Russian troops operated by the United Nations and dropped in black helicopters, you shouldn't be playing with guns. You know, and again, if you think there's something sinister about Amtrak, as far as I'm concerned, you shouldn't even have a driver's license. You ought to be on the inside of a padded cell. And it's serious stuff. Take a look at these so-called free men up in Montana right now. What a bunch of patriots. They were passing bad checks to various stores that they patronized. That's not real patriotic. You know, if I'm running a hardware store and you come and I let you write a check for goods that you purchase over the counter and your check bounces because you don't believe in the monetary system and you have liens out against various things, that's not patriotic. You're just screwing me, you know? That's called thievery. That's a ripoff, right? There's nothing patriotic about that. They were threatening to kidnap federal judges. They were threatening to murder the local sheriff. Land leased by one of their neighbors to grow crops on was denied. The harvest was denied to their neighbors. One of the neighbors of these clowns had leased land from them. When he went to pick up the crops that he had raised on the land he leased from them, they drove him off at gunpoint. That's thievery. That's not patriotism. That's a ripoff. That's not patriotism. That's criminal behavior. That's not a patriotism. And they're sure as bloody hell not resisting the New World Order. And yet the militias have stood by these people, right? And again, I have all the sympathy in the world for the farmers who have been screwed up the wazoo, but that ain't the way to respond. And for the blind defenders of the militias, what's patriotic about that? And also, I want to note, as it's tax time here, note that all those federal agents who make a pretty good rate of pay are getting paid by our tax dollars, where they're sitting there basically, you know, asking them whether they want, you know, pepperoni or cheese on their takeout pizza, you know? That's not real good. We're paying for that. Now, just imagine if a bunch of black people in South Central Los Angeles had been writing bad checks and threatening to kidnap a federal judge or murder the local sheriff. You think they'd be standing by going, now, we certainly don't want to act untoward here. Bloody hell, they wouldn't. They would have gone in, guns blazing, killed them all, and everybody would have said, yeah, right on, man, with except for the people in South Central L.A. and other members of the African-American community who would then be termed a bunch of no-goodniks. And this is proof that, you know, the blacks are no good, right? Because they were, say, objected to the bulldozing of these people. Again, for the people who would attribute these so-called free men, would attribute innocence to them, just think about that. Again, I think that the situation and the rhetoric vis-a-vis the militias is inadequate on both sides. I would also note, by the way, that a woman named Broderick, who's been involved in this check scam, is based in Lancaster, California. That was the operational base of Wesley Swift and, for a time, William Potter Gale. So we may actually be looking at a direct element of lineage from the past to the present, hence some of my discussion of that. Now, one of the reasons why I view the militias as analogous to the social revolutionary wing of the Nazi Party, the National Bolsheviks, the cutting edge of the Conservative Revolution in Weimar Germany, and I think that the militias are in many ways being manipulated in a similar fashion and serving as an extension of the government for the Conservative Revolution of Newt Gingrich, okay, same damn name. That's what Conservative Revolution means. It means conservative revolution. That was a right-wing movement in Weimar Germany running from intellectuals, aristocrats, and military officers right on down to students and right-wing people of right-wing persuasion. It involved elements of the military, the underground elements of the German military, the so-called Freikorps or Black Reichswehr or Underground Reichswehr, again connected with the national security establishment of Weimar Germany, operating underground as a militia, systematically assassinated the political opposition in Weimar Germany, paving the way for Hitler's rise to power. I think an analogous relationship exists between the militia movement and the conservative revolution of Newt Gingrich, hence my construction of that parallel, or my enunciation of what I believe to be a valid parallel. The difference, of course, is that the social revolutionaries in Weimar Germany thought they were going to overthrow, they were many of them disaffected leftists. Yet they thought that they were going to overthrow the forces of international corporate capitalism and international finance on behalf of Adolf Hitler, who was the ultimate manifestation of international corporate capitalism and high finance. Then, after they'd helped do Hitler's dirty work for them, they were liquidated in 1934, and I think the sincere conservatives within the militia movement are being similarly used and abused, and I think that in time they will share a similar fate after a number of things happen, and I'm going to delineate those right now. There are already very evident areas of overlap between the militias and the right wing of the Republican Party and Newt Gingrich. Hence the title of the lecture, The Militia Movement, Enemy or Pawn of the State. Okay? The Republican Party has been very active, overtly so, in their opposition to gun control and the ban on assault weapons, and I am a firm opponent of gun control, which I think is being manipulated to help affect the polarization and stratification that I've already talked about. My next lecture on May 18th is going to be fascism, gun control, and the intelligence community. I think in many ways we're being treated to a dog and pony show, as with Waco. I think the forces behind Waco and the forces behind gun control are also the forces propelling the militia movement, and the first two are intended to help foster the latter. It's basically like a provocation scenario. It's a technique called sword and shield in many ways. Machiavellian in the extreme, or we're going to talk about that. But the right wing of the Republican Party has some very obvious links with the militia movement. The overturning of the ban on assault weapons is perhaps the most obvious element of that. One of the areas in which the militia movement overlaps another element of right-wing populism, and in this area of overlap, again, as with the Minutemen, as with the paramilitary right, they overlap fascist groups. They are not coterminous with it. They overlap the national security establishment. They are not coterminous with it, and they were used by the national security establishment, although not coterminous with it. Overlapping the militia movement, although not coterminous with it, is a radical right-wing and local rule-based anti-environmental movement, which has manifested itself as the ironically named Wise Use Movement, and there's nothing wise about the way they're using the environment, and also the County Rule Movement. Over 100 counties in western states had declared themselves exempt from federal environmental regulations or any other kind of regulations. I would also note in the wake of the contract on America, as I call it, or contract with America, 18 states have very quietly passed resolutions, legislation, exempting corporations in those states from federal environmental regulations and making compliance completely voluntary. In other words, these corporations are on the honor system. No, we're not putting toxic waste in that river. No, nope, all those people getting cancer. No, they ain't about it. Bad luck, man. We wouldn't tell a lie. Not more than a half dozen before lunch on Friday at any rate. Just bear that in mind. There's not been a lot of discussion. 18 states have passed legislation exempting corporations in those states from federal environmental regulations and allowing them to voluntarily police themselves. Good luck, man. Good luck. You know, I'll tell you, I'd love to be a doctor in those states, man. They're going to be so much business. I'm going to pause here while Tim turns over the tape. That is going to be some serious expletive deleted. And it's also, I think, one of the indications that this supposed, I think the Newt Gingrich revolution is a fascist phenomenon. Now,